You're listening to a podcast from the Rocking Vicars Media Motel.
Hello, I'm Terence Stackham. This is podcast 211 from the Media Motel. I'll tell you what's coming up right after the pageantry and splendour that is Steely Dan.
Soon everybody knew the thing was
From the blistering summer of 1976, Steely Dan from the album The Royal Scam and Haitian Divorce. Dolly back, fade to black. This is the place to be for the next hour. Unless you're somewhere else, then clearly that's the place for you to be. I'm going to be looking back on the week that has just been. We have 12 delicious tracks of music, some old, some new, some halfway between. And the highlight, the single most popular feature in the history of all podcasts ever, me talking about me. In the UK and the United States in 1999, Len and Still My Sunshine. The influence of this podcast continues to be felt far and indeed wide. No sooner had I mentioned last week the disastrous nature of the BBC's Wimbledon highlight show when they made the sensible decision to bail out of all of the W1A style gimmicks and simply revert to showing the tennis with insights and expert commentary from John McEnroe. So, beware the wrath is all I'm saying. You may remember I went to see Fleetwood Mac last week. I may have mentioned it. And I was telling some friends about the gig during the week, and we got talking about one of the stranger periods in the history of Fleetwood Mac, just before Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks joined. In 1974, to all intents and purposes, there were three versions of Fleetwood Mac. There were three Fleetwood Macs in existence. The original Peter Green version, then the Mick Fleetwood and John McVie lineup, and then there was a third lineup. The Mick Fleetwood version, I know it's a bit complicated, but the Mick Fleetwood version couldn't undertake a tour in 1974 for various reasons, most of which can be guessed at. And so he and their manager put together a third version of the band, which was supposed to be a new lineup with Mick Fleetwood on drums and the wonderfully named Elmer Gantry on vocals. And it all went terribly wrong and ended in rather fierce litigation, with the band dropping their manager in the process. But the whole debacle ended up in a hit single. The remnants of that third unofficial Fleetwood Mac renamed themselves as Stretch and wrote this song, the lyrics of which are not about a boy and a girl, but are something of an attack on Mick Fleetwood.
I've been thinking about what you have done to me. The damage is much deeper than you'll ever see. Hit me like a hammer to my head. I wonder where you pushed or where you led. Why did you do it? Why did you do that thing to me? Why did you do it? Why did you do that thing to me? Truth, man, that's him, me and you. My friends, they listen to the things I say. They listen and they hear more every day. But I know they never understand it, because it was no accident, you planned it. Why did you do it? Why did you do that thing to me? Why did you do it? Why did you do that thing to me? The only one who knows the truth, man, that's him, me and you. 1, 2.
From a time over 40 years ago when it looked like Fleetwood Mac were dead in the water, with lyrics aimed at Mick Fleetwood and the band's then manager, Clifford Davis. That stretch and Why Did You Do It? I spent Monday and Tuesday of this week somewhat locked away script editing. It's for a pilot of a TV show that ITV are looking at. And I thought I'd take a moment to explain the script editing process. Because every writer hates script editors. Every writer can't bear to see their words cut. And a writer might be told, OK, we'll commission you to write this 24-minute pilot. But 24 minutes, remember? And then that writer will fill pages and pages and pages until they submit a script that will probably cover about an hour and a half. And then someone like me this week goes back to them and says, you know, oh, hey, why don't we cut out all this 40-minute detail on the train? And what happens next is that the writer nearly falls out of their tree telling you how vital every word is. Things as it seems. Currently on tour, but in Victoria, New South Wales and Queensland in her home country of Australia. Another rewarding in sort of inverted commas, part of script editing is that you become a sort of ersatz teacher correcting homework. For example, this email exchange from this week, and by the way, I always soften the blow by referring to spelling mistakes as typos, which kind of implies, doesn't it, that they know how to spell, it's just a slip of the keyboard. So this is the original email from me. Also, I've corrected a few typos. See the red font? Then the writer back to me, oh, well, that's odd. I put it through spell check. And then me, oh, not to worry. And the writer said, this is amazing, the thing is, typos don't really matter as they're going to say the words. And so I said it back, yes, but ITV might think it remiss when they read the script if there's errors in it. It all went rather quiet after that. So now it's just a case of cutting another 20 pages or so to squeeze it down to the 24 minutes he was originally asked to provide. Anyway, here's a band that I absolutely loved in the early 1970s. There were about 10 of them in this group, and they were lively participants in the pre-punk pub rock scene around London. And that they failed to become huge has always been something of a mystery to me. This is Kokomo, and from their first album, this is Angel.
Fly away with me.
As a live band, Kokomo were extraordinary. They were a magnificent fusion of jazz, funk, soul, a sort of bigger, brasher, average white band. And they were absolutely superb live. But I imagine it must have been just simply been financially impossible to keep a band together on the pub rock circuit when the money has to be split 10 ways. But if you want to hear more of Kokomo, I'd say you need to seek out their first two albums. The first one, released in 1975, is called Kokomo, and from a year later, the follow-up, Rise and Shine. One other quirky twist in the short life of the band Kokomo is that they happened to be in New York when Bob Dylan was recording his album Desire. And for a while, Dylan became obsessed with Kokomo, so he invited them to join him on the sessions for Desire. And you can hear the band both on a couple of tracks on the official album and on various bootleg outtakes. So that was Kokomo and Angel. Around this time of pub rock, and as it transformed itself into the punk scene in London, many of the bands who'd been playing bluesy American-influenced 10-minute jams, a few weeks later cut all their hair short and started playing sort of feverishly fast 3-minute anthems about life on the dole. And I was working in the music industry at the time, and as punk splintered into new wave, this was the time I was, I suppose, re-wooing Viv Albertine, having already tried to win her heart about 3 years before. My wooing was pretty unsuccessful, it has to be said, but I do remember a night when we went to see this band at the Nashville Room on the corner of North End Road where Fulham meets Kensington.
Tell me.
a terrific 3 minutes with Holly and the Italians. Tell That Girl to Shut Up. They more or less styled themselves as a sort of Los Angeles Ramones, albeit, of course, with a woman singer and guitarist, Holly Beth Vincent. Now, at that time, the mid to late 1970s, there was probably no greater influence in terms of learning about new music, perhaps apart, at least for a while, the John Peel radio shows. No greater influence than the British music press. And so great was the appeal and desire to find out the latest information that I subsequently found out that others did this too, many others did this. I went to bizarre lengths to get the weekly music papers almost as they rolled off the presses. Back in this period, let's say 1977-78, the music papers were published around the country each Thursday, but they found their way to certain parts of London on a Wednesday afternoon. So I would actually take the train on a Wednesday lunchtime from my Surrey home, arrive at Waterloo, walk over Hungerford Bridge, behind Trafalgar Square, across Leicester Square, through Soho to Tottenham Court Road, and then grab the first copies of Sounds, Melody Maker, Record Mirror, and the most important of all, the New Musical Express. That was the Holy Grail. Then I'd get the tube straight back to Waterloo, the train back to Weybridge, and devour the music papers on the way home. And with the NME, the New Musical Express, I was part of a readership, astonishing to consider now, of 300,000 people, 300,000 copies sold each week. Thank you.
we shall draw tongue, yes, we shall draw tongue, yes, on and on and on.
A terrific new band, a collective of jazz and reggae musicians from London and Paris. That's Dojo and the track Undivided. And if you like that track, they have an album due out this summer. They're also playing live here and there at the moment. And they have a Facebook page if you want to find out more. Dojo, D-O-J-O. Now, back in the 70s, the other music papers were poor relations to the New Musical Express, although the NME was very slow to pick up on the punk movement. It still was positioned as the hip place to be, and it certainly, collectively, was home to the best writers, and best of all, I think, succeeded in creating a sort of humorous image that added to the mix at a time when punk bands could be rather earnest and po-faced about your anarchy and the establishment. And the best weeks at the NME could be those when Mick Farren, he was on his high horse about something, Ian Penman writing about Grace Jones or Coronation Street, and you knew you were in for a treat if the front cover of the NME promised Danny Baker reviews the singles. Those were the best weeks. And along with cartoons and extraordinary photography, I had a wall covered with photos cut out from the NME. And there was a marvellous small ad section where sellers of loon pants found themselves now battling for space as a new wave of advertisers sought buyers for Debbie Harry posters and bondage trousers. Polystyrene with X-ray specs from early 1978, The Day the World Turned Dayglow. In more recent years, whether to do with the demise of paper publishing and the decline of advertising, of course, those three pretenders, Record Mirror, Sounds and Melody Maker, have long gone, and only the New Musical Express remains amongst those weekly music papers. However, the NME's sales have plummeted to alarming levels from that weekly 300,000 that I mentioned in the 1970s to a current rather dismal 14,000 each week. So this week we heard confirmation of the worst kept secret in publishing, that the NME is to be given away free of charge from September this year. Currently it costs £2.50 to buy in the shops. But it's not the cover price that determines success, it's the ability to pull in long-term advertising. And, you know, will this move to free achieve that? Well, there's a good piece in Media Week at the moment suggesting that it might do just that. Using the example of Time Out magazine, which had a hopeless print circulation of 55,000 in 2012, is now handed out for free at tube stations and so on, and has a circulation now of over 300,000. And that's what advertisers want, a reach to people in work with disposable income. So good luck, NME. Walking on a dream. There's some pieces of music that just, for me, evoke a particular place and time. Nothing can do that as regularly as music can for me. And that track just makes me think of the sun coming up behind the mountains and the day beginning, and I'm waking up in a little house on the pine walk at Puerto de Pienza in the north of Mallorca. That's Empire of the Sun, Walking on a Dream. Had I the heavens embroidered cloths enwrought with golden and silver light, the blue and the dim and the dark cloths of night and light and the half-light, I would spread the cloths under your feet. But I, being poor, have only my dreams. I have spread my dreams under your feet. Tread softly, because you tread on my dreams. Last week I mentioned Beats One, the new radio station or audio listening service from Apple, part of the new Apple Music palaver. My friend James Cridland, he's a radio futurologist. He highlighted a really innovative answer in his newsletter this week. If you would like to hear the music being featured on Beats 1, but either don't want to bother signing up to Apple Music or don't want to hear disc jockeys shouting at you or rambling over the middle eight of your favourite track, there's a free app available, Android and iPhone, both, that includes the service Free Beats One, which is a fully legal clone of Beats One, but without the DJs. They just program the music that's just been played on Beats One. I think it's absolutely brilliant. It's more than that, too, because this app that I'm going to tell you about, it also gives you easy access to just about every radio station all over the world. And if you don't like a song, it's really clever. You just swipe and you're taken to another station of a similar genre. I've tried it this week and it's really great, especially in the car. I should stress, they're not paying me. I don't know anything of this company, no involvement at all. I just thought I'd tell you and recommend this app. It's called 6 Seconds, with 6 as a number. 6 Seconds. Try it and see what you think.
Welcome to the jungle. We've got fun and games. We've got everything you want. Honey, I know the names. We're the ones that can find whatever you might need. If you got the money or honey, I'll be your disease.
Melancholy of Novo Amor, which is the guise of 23-year-old Ali Lacey from Wales. And from earlier this year, Welcome to the Jungle, an astonishing cover, really, of a Guns N' Roses song. I've been thinking today about the economic model of supply and demand. But just before you all turn off in haste and despair, I'm relating it to London theatre ticket costs. And a report in the Stage newspaper this week, the Stage, a weekly UK paper covering entertainment, especially, of course, the theatre. And there's a piece in the Stage from their annual survey of West End theatre ticket prices. Now, wait for this. The most expensive seat in the West End is for the Book of Mormon, and it's at £202.25. That's just for the one ticket, no booking fees or add-ons, £202.25. I would want to own that seat for £202.25. I'd want to be carried to my velvet-coated seat by a team of uniformed robots. I'd expect champagne, a butler, and to be fed grapes for £202.25. And, do you know what, I was thinking, isn't the 25 pence the ultimate insult? They couldn't just make it £202. They had to screw the public for that extra 25p. Yet, you know, the Book of Mormon is one of the hottest tickets in town. So that's why I refer to supply and demand. So long as people are prepared to pay astronomical sums to sit in uncomfortable seats in Victorian theatres with terrible sight lines and almost non-existent air conditioning and pay £6 for a plastic cup of cheap wine, then those prices will just keep rising. That Book of Mormon ticket has increased by 33% year on year. And that's bearing in mind a quick reminder that inflation in the UK is running about 1%. So inflation 1%, Book of Mormon tickets 33% increase. Nice work if you can get it.
Throw your heart to me. Let it fall and hit the ground. Let it go. Your timing was so wrong. I feel the light of me. I sigh. I don't ever know why I care. It's brighter this time, this type of mind, this disguise. Ooh, you talk, ooh, to me. Nothing's gonna hurt me with my eyes shut. I can see through them, I can see through them. I'm drawing pictures, I'm evading. I will not use them, I will not use them.
This week from their album Communion, that's Years and Years and Eyes Shut. Let's just have a recap of the music played this week. We started with Steely Dan, Haitian Divorce, Len, Steal My Sunshine, Stretch, Why Did You Do It, Gordy, Nothing's As It Seems, Kokomo, Angel. Then we heard Holly and the Italians, Tell That Girl to Shut Up, Dojo, Undivided, X-Ray Specs and the Day the World Turned Dayglow. We heard Empire of the Sun, Walking on a Dream, Novo Amor, Welcome to the Jungle, and that was Years and Years with Eyes Shut. Our final track this week comes from a 1970 album that features Klaus Voormann, Mick Jagger, George Harrison, Ringo Starr, Bill Wyman, Eric Clapton, Stevie Winwood, Joe Cocker and Merry Clayton, amongst others. How about that? Playing us out, Leon Russell's ode to Rita Coolidge, Delta Lady. My name is Terence Dackham. I'll see you next time.
You have been listening to a Dackham Media production.